I'm Roby Brock. Welcome to this week's edition of Talk Business and Politics. On our agenda, new polling data. Arkansas politics heats up. We take a look at new numbers from the Arkansas governor's race in our latest Talk Business Hendricks College poll. Healthcare moves are reshaping the landscape. St. Vincent's parent company buys QualChoice Insurance and a Hot Springs hospital. QualChoice CEO Mike Stock and State Senator David Sanders join me for insights on these moves and what else is happening in the marketplace and policy arenas. Several judicial candidates are facing lawsuits regarding their license filings. Technicality or real trouble? We'll explore with Blue Hog Report blogger Matt Campbell. Plus, we'll run through the biggest business and political headlines of the last week. I'm Roby Brock. Stick around for the next half hour. We'll talk business, politics, and much more. Welcome to the program. I'm Roby Brock. Glad to have you with us this week. Now, we start first with moves made in the healthcare arena this past week. On Tuesday, St. Vincent's parent company Catholic Health Initiatives acquired a Hot Springs hospital owned by Mercy Health for an undisclosed sum. The move expands St. Vincent's footprint into that region of the state. One day later, an announcement that Catholic Health will acquire Little Rock-based health insurance provider QualChoice. Couple those moves with health care reform, a March 31st enrollment deadline for federal health care, and changes in Arkansas's health care policies, and you've got a lot to diagnose. I sat down with QualChoice CEO Mike Stock and State Senator David Sanders, a Republican from Little Rock, to get their take on the latest. Michael, let's start with you first. Let's start with what this acquisition of QualChoice actually means. Is this going to be good for QualChoice, good for Arkansas? What are the advantages, and maybe what are some of the disadvantages of this acquisition?
I think it'll be good for both QualChoice and Arkansas. As you know, CHI, Catholic Health Initiatives, one of the largest providers of health care in the country. They're in 18 states, and they have a plan to expand their footprint in financing health care. And they want to use QualChoice as the administrative center for doing that and run all their administrative operations through this.
I like operation the sound here, of that because that sounds like you're going to have to hire more people to handle more administrative functions, which sounds like high-paying jobs to me.
That's the plan. Down the road, there'll be expansion here.
What about expansion of the health insurance products that you have, opportunities for you guys outside of Arkansas in that respect?
The system is interested in both getting more involved in Medicare Advantage products and in the commercial market. They'll do that by looking, I'm sure, at other acquisition targets or by standing up new plans in those markets. And I expect us to be expanding into the Medicare Advantage products lines here in Arkansas.
Senator Sanders, you're all about competition in the marketplace. Yeah. This seems to be bolstering some competition here.
Well, it is. And again, if you look at sort of the traditional roles that insurers, healthcare entities, and doctors have played, I mean, so what we're seeing and what we have seen for quite some time is movement in how sort of the traditional players are organized and how they move forward. So I think this is a sort of an indication of what's to come, not only here in Arkansas, but I think nationally as well. So, CHI is a major player nationally. They have been doing innovative initiatives in healthcare outside of the state of Arkansas as well. And so, I think it's a net positive, so long as what we try not to do is not to move with the market changes. You know, we have a tendency as policymakers and regulators to hold fast and hold true to how things were organized. Mm-hmm. This world of healthcare is changing before our very eyes. In fact, Arkansas is part of that change nationally, and so I think there's another reason for people to be watching Arkansas.
Is there anything from a regulatory perspective or a legislative perspective that you think might need to change to do what Senator Sanders is talking about, make this marketplace more competitive?
There are different ways to create competitiveness in the marketplace. You can do it either just with pure brute force and pricing, or you can do it by designing and devising alternative kinds of ways of delivering the product and care. And I think there are going to be those kinds of opportunities here. Arkansas has a law that deals with any willing provider, which makes it a little bit more challenging to create alternative ways of putting together networks of providers. But those kinds of things are developing across the country. Accountable care organizations are a phenomenon that was promoted and pushed through the Affordable Care Act. And I think you're beginning to see those develop here in Arkansas, too.
Well, anything on your agenda?
Well, sure. And I think we have to be careful. So, I mean, we don't want to, you know, in the name of innovation, throw out the baby with the bathwater, and that we just move and change things, wave things, make changes. I mean, St. Vincent was one of the lead proponents of any willing provider in Arkansas decades ago. And look, I think it has served the state well in many respects. So I think what we need to do is every policy debate that we have and every conversation that we have about the regulatory framework, the legal framework is, we have to acknowledge that we are operating in a new environment and laws that were passed. And again, we're looking at this in terms of Medicaid, we're looking at it in terms of all kinds of programs that the state has. You know, a lot of the programs we have were created and contemplated in an environment where you didn't have the proliferation of coverage. So we're all moving together on this, and I think that's the important thing that we do, is that we're mindful that, you know, a move here it can affect something over here.
Let's talk about in the Democrat Gazette this past week, there was a news report that highlighted QualChoice's kind of low-keying its participation in the private option. Obviously, that was by somewhat design because you had something bigger in the works there. A self-imposed cap of 1,280 plans. Senator Sanders, you said you might need some clarification on this.
Well,
I'm going to give you an opportunity for some clarification here.
So I knew the fact that they had requested a cap. I didn't know that it was that small. Now, obviously, if they're in negotiations with a potential buyout purchase and someone else acquiring them, you know, the private option is a very innovative policy. And there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of that population, you know, utilization, you know, how they are going to adapt to something that they've never had before, and that is health insurance. So I understand that. I guess my hope is I do know that CHI and QualChoice they will be more capitalized. Mike, I look forward to you guys participating more in the private option. And again, we have information on the population now. So what was unknown is less unknown. There's still some uncertainty there, don't get me wrong, but I think there's an opportunity for QualChoice to participate and be even more price competitive.
I mean, I think the answer to the issue, Roby, is, I mean, we knew that with insurance companies like banks, they have to be capitalized at certain reserve levels based upon the size of the business that they have and the volume that they have. With this large influx of new lives coming into the marketplace, QualChoice knew that we were going to add capital to the company to participate in that arena. In discussion with the shareholders, there was an avenue that was being worked to get there. We thought it was going to wrap up and be finished quicker, but in many times, you know, these transactions drag on.
You don't get to control those things.
You don't get to control the negotiations and the lawyering that goes into putting these transactions together. And so it took longer to get to the finish line where we want it to be. And because of that, the Department of Insurance worked with us to kind of control the flow of lives into the plan as that was being finished. And we hope that the whole transaction will close by the end of this month, and then we'll turn the spigot back on.
Well, to your point about me wanting and others wanting more competition, I think what we have seen here and what has been demonstrated with their experience is that, one, we will work with carriers. And what you've seen, obviously, AM Better come into the marketplace. They're a new competitor. We want others. Mike might not want to hear that, and Blue Cross Blue Shield might not want to hear that. AM Better may not want to hear that. But in this ever-changing environment, we think, but again, Arkansas has the youngest pool in terms of its exchange in the country. We think that will be borne out as we begin to plan for plan year 2015, some of the things that we're looking at with health savings accounts to encourage consumerism and healthcare, one of our favorite words. I think it will have an impact, but, I mean, let it you know, take note that Arkansas has shown that they will work with their folks, take a longer approach. What we wouldn't have wanted to happen is for the state to say, no, you got to be in. They couldn't have pulled it off, and then, you know, it be, you know, maybe not a failure, but it may have not have gone off as well.
That's QualChoice CEO Mike Stock and State Senator David Sanders, one of the main architects of the private option, by the way. There's much more to this conversation, which you can listen to online at talkbusiness.net. Now stick around, we've got a look at a brewing controversy over judicial candidates for office, plus new poll numbers in the Arkansas governor's race. I'm Roby Brock, this is Talk Business and Politics.
Talk Business and Politics is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
There was a lot happening on the business and political fronts in Arkansas this past week. As always, let's run through this week's top headlines. The College of Business at Arkansas Tech University in Russellville is launching a new resource for tracking economic trends that promises to examine a wide range of activity statewide and in 16 local communities. The Arkansas Tech Business Index encompasses a labor index, a housing market report, construction activity, and retail sales activity. The 16 cities include Little Rock, North Little Rock, Conway, Pine Bluff, El Dorado, Texarkana, Hot Springs, Russellville, Fort Smith, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, and Bentonville, Jonesboro, Searcy, and West Memphis. The release of the index is available online at www.atu.edu/ATBI. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Mike Ross announced a plan to expand access to pre-kindergarten education for four-year-olds in Arkansas, a proposal that comes with a $37 million a year price tag when fully implemented. Ross said it would be his big-ticket item related to education, describing it as the front and centerpiece of his education reform initiative. He said other education proposals would be forthcoming, but with smaller price tags. Ross faces challenger Lynette Bryant in the May 20th Democratic primary. Arkansas tax officials released the March revenue report, which showed an 11.6% increase in net revenues versus the previous year. March marks the end of the third quarter for the state's current fiscal year. All major categories of collections were above forecast during the month. Year-to-date, net tax collections topped $3.59 billion. That's 2.7% above year-ago levels and 2.2% above year-to-date forecast. After more than 6 months of preliminary review, Magellan Midstream Partners says the market will support its interest in a potential pipeline from Fort Smith to Little Rock. The project would transport up to 75,000 barrels per day of gasoline, diesel fuel, and jet fuel. Magellan said it received sufficient commitments during the last 6 months to move forward on the pipeline infrastructure project. It must still receive permit and regulatory approval. Magellan says the pipeline could be operational by late 2015 if it's allowed. Well, what's cooking in Arkansas's hospitality and culinary industry? A new website that hopes to match those looking for food-related jobs to employers wanting to hire talent. A new online job search tool began operations last week called rfoodjobs.com, arfoodjobs.com. The website seeks to link employers and qualified job seekers in Arkansas's culinary industry. Another major political development this past week centered around the late filings of attorney licenses for a number of judicial candidates and sitting judges in Arkansas. Do their late filings disqualify them to serve? I sat down with blogger Matt Campbell, leader of the BlueHogReport.com, which has broken news on this subject and is involved in a lawsuit on the matter. What happens next? Let's find out.
Does the law require a continuous application of this licensure for the 6 years for these circuit judges, or does it just have to happen kind of cumulatively in all this?
Well, under Amendment 80, whether you're talking about a circuit judge or somebody running for one of the appellate courts, the language of the amendment is specifically that it has to be, you know, 6 years or 8 years immediately preceding the date that they would take office. Whether an administrative suspension qualifies as not being licensed is sort of the $64,000 question at this point, but it has to be immediate either way.
And there's been a court ruling on this matter already. What kind of the basics of it?
A candidate was running against Judge Tim Fox here in Pulaski County, and her license had been administratively suspended for failure to get continuing legal education credits and also non-payment of fees. She was challenged, and the judge said, you know, a suspension is a suspension. It doesn't matter if it's administrative or disciplinary, and she was disqualified from the ballot.
So do you think this is how it's going to play out? Is that the precedent that's set now as we look at some of these other judicial candidate filings?
Well, because the Secretary of State's office has to be named as a defendant in all these suits, all the suits are going to have to be brought in Pulaski County. So you've got sort of that. It's not technically binding, but they defer to it quite a bit when it's already been ruled on in one circuit. So I think you're going to see, at least on the circuit court level, all these cases should sort of wrap up the same way, and then it'll be a question for the appellate court.
And you're a lawyer. Is there any kind of wiggle room in all this? You've analyzed it, you've researched it, you've looked at the interpretation, and so do you see any way that there is a justifiable way to argue that just these couple of days lapses in some of these license filings could actually be overlooked?
I think so. I think really, you know, the lack of due process with these administrative suspensions, you know, if you don't pay, then your license is suspended. There's no hearing where you can sort of defend that. I think that's probably the strongest argument, that an administrative suspension isn't really a suspension. You still have a license. You know, you're technically just not able to practice in that window. And then as soon as you pay, everything's reinstated as if, you know, there was never a hiccup.
Kind of like paying a ticket for your tags not being, or for your tags being expired, you pay the fine and your tags are caught up after that. So
exactly. Or even with the driver's license suspension, you know, you can still have a license but be suspended and not be able to drive with it. So the question is having a license but not being able to practice a distinct question?
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see how that plays out. One last question for you. Give me a couple of scenarios of how you think this might play out. Could we see this application of what we have seen in a couple of cases so far? Could we see this? Are we looking at all 75 counties, judges in all 75 counties going under this type of scrutiny?
My guess is anywhere, especially where you have any contested races, you've probably got one candidate or the other checking to see if there's been any kind of administrative suspension.
Probably sweating at this point
in
time.
Yeah, for the people who've had a suspension. So I'd say you'll get a lot of people looking. I'd say there'll be some more lawsuits. Eventually, it's going to be a question the Supreme Court has to answer as to whether an administrative suspension is something that can disqualify you. If they agree that a suspension is a suspension, then you're probably looking at multiple seats that the next governor is going to have to appoint judges for, because there's not going to be a viable candidate.
That's attorney and political blogger Matt Campbell. You can read his analysis on BlueHogReport.com, or you can catch a replay of our interview at TalkBusiness.net. When we come back, new poll numbers regarding the Arkansas governor's race. Asa Hutchinson, Mike Ross, Lynette Bryant, Curtis Coleman. Those are the Democrats and Republicans. We even threw in the Green Party and Libertarian candidates as we set a baseline for the fall. Who might be your next governor? Those numbers when we come back.
Talk Business and Politics is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
As we will do throughout the 2014 campaign cycle, Talk Business and Politics, in partnership with Hendricks College, will continue our polling of the races and issues that will be on the ballot this year. Our latest survey, which was conducted last Thursday and Friday, takes a look at the Arkansas governor's race, the U.S. Senate matchup, and three potential ballot items that you may be voting on this November. We polled more than 1,000 likely Arkansas voters, and the poll has a margin of error of plus or minus 3%. Here are the results of the governor's race from three different questions that we posed. First, a hypothetical matchup between Republican Curtis Coleman, Democrat Mike Ross, and the Libertarian and Green Party candidates. 48% said they would vote for Democrat Mike Ross, 30% for Republican Curtis Coleman, 4% for Libertarian Frank Gilbert, 3% for Green Party candidate Joshua Drake, and 15% were undecided. What if, by some circumstance, Democrat Lynette Bryant won her party's nomination and faced Republican frontrunner Asa Hutchinson? Our survey found that 48% would support Republican Asa Hutchinson, 27.5% support Democrat Lynette Bryant, 4.5% Green Party candidate Joshua Drake, 3% Libertarian Frank Gilbert, and 17% undecided. And finally, the presumed matchup between the frontrunners for the Democratic and Republican nominations, Mike Ross versus Asa Hutchinson. 44% support Democrat Mike Ross, 43% Republican Asa Hutchinson, 3% Libertarian Frank Gilbert, 2% Green Party candidate Joshua Drake, and only 8% undecided. That race is a virtual dead heat when you look at that margin of error. Now, the last time we polled Hutchinson versus Ross last October, Hutchinson led Ross by a 41-37% margin with 22% undecided. So as you can see, there has been some movement in that race, particularly as the undecided voters have shrunk to that 8%. You can read more analysis from Hendricks College political science professor Dr. Jay Barth and from me at our website, talkbusiness.net. Now, coming later this week, we'll reveal the latest poll results from the U.S. Senate race between Tom Cotton and Mark Pryor, and voter attitudes on raising the minimum wage, medical marijuana, and a legislative-referred ethics and term limits amendment. You can catch all of that at talkbusiness.net. Well, that's all for this week's program. We appreciate you tuning in. Drop me an email at roby@talkbusiness.net and share your thoughts and comments. Also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/robybrock or on Facebook at facebook.com/robybrock. Have a busy and a productive week. We hope that you'll join us again next time for the latest in business and politics. Until then, take care.